Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There it is. Those are the sweet strains of the Yub Nub Ewok song, celebrating the victory of the Battle of Endor in the third of the three original Star Wars trilogy films and the subject of today's episode, Return of the Jedi. My name is Matt Gourley. This is I Was There Too, the show where I talk to people present in the great scenes of cinema history. Today, my guest is none other than an Ewok. No, I think up to seven Ewoks, as a matter of fact, most notably the Ewoks Chubbre and Paploo. And though maybe there are four people tops out there that don't know exactly which Ewoks they were, Chubbre was the guy that operated the catapult, and Paploo was the famous hero Ewok that stole the speeder bikes away from the biker scouts so the rebels could get into the shield bunker and place their charges, thus bringing down the second Death Star. He's a hero to all. His name is Kevin Thompson, and more than anything, I think he firmly makes the case that the Ewoks and the actors who played them were the real badasses of the Star Wars universe. Kevin himself acknowledges the occasional disdain for Ewoks, and even Return of the Jedi in general sometimes as the weaker of the three films. But I have to say that I personally don't fall into that category. I've mentioned before that this film came out when I was 10 years old, and I've kind of allowed it to be grandfathered in before I discovered any kind of critical eye for films. It still just fills me with joy. I love all three films, but this one does hold a special place in my heart. These three episodes have been a blast, and I hope to revisit some more Star Wars before too long, because I can't get enough. Okay, here we go. Yup, yup.
The film, Return of the Jedi. The year, 1983. The roles, Chubbre the Ewok and Paploo the Ewok. The actor, Kevin Thompson.
Kevin Thompson, welcome to I Was There Too. I want you to bear with me for a second. I'm going to take you down a train of thought that I think is going to end in your favor here. Now, just answer me this.
Yub.
Okay. Already we're off to a good start.
Alrighty.
You played Chubbre the Ewok in Return of the Jedi, as well as Paploo the Ewok at a very pivotal moment when he swings from the speeder bike after stealing it from the biker scouts on Endor, correct?
Correctamundo.
Okay. Now, this is my contention that
okay,
it's that very act of stealing those bikes and getting those biker scouts away so that the rebels can blow up the shield generator, which in turn blows up the Death Star, which brings down the fall, the entire empire.
Basically, Luke Skywalker has me to thank, yes.
That's where I'm heading with this. You could be the hero of the rebels.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with that. And I wish more people would tell George Lucas that, because yes, that I am. Everybody sits there and thinks it's Han Solo, you know that, and he gets all the frickin' movies. But me, no, I have to go off and play some other alien creature.
It's the real heroes that are the, you know, the unthanked. They walk around day to day. They carry that honor with them.
But
silent.
Me playing the Ewoks, you've had these people who have been so anti Ewok around the intergalactic Star Wars globe, which, and then I come to the celebrations and the true fans who know, you know, like yourself,
they know,
who
yeah.
know that it was the Ewoks who, you know, they, we were the scourge to the stormtroopers because we used to have them over for barbecues. They just never left.
We so need to rewrite history.
Many parts of a stormtrooper are edible.
What's the best?
Oh, you know, legs and thighs.
If I was going to sit down for my first stormtrooper meal.
Yes.
Well, you got to crack the hard shell like a lobster. Is that kind of the deal?
Exactly. You know, I'm kind of a dark meat type of guy.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I like the legs.
Okay. All right. I'm in. I'm waiting for my dinner invitation.
Okay. No problem. Okay.
All right.
Next time we have one, we'll come on over.
Okay. Well, thank you for being here.
What, am I leaving now?
No, we're done.
Wow, that was quick.
See, thanks. You answered the question I needed to know. I'm going to get your head on a coin.
All right, I'll go get my car.
How much of a Star Wars...
My speeder bike is double parked.
Oh, I wish.
Oh, that'd be cool. Yeah. I saw those, you know, when we first got there, we saw those, and they were doing the stunts with the guys falling off them, and Dickie, Julius, and Mike were doing those, and Larry were doing those types of stunts of running into the things and all that. And I'm looking at that going, whoa, that's cool. And we had no idea what they were going to do.
Yeah.
It's just the look of them.
Right,
just
yeah.
That's cool. Because I was a Star Wars nerd when I got the
part. That's what I was going to ask you. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So you were quite a fan. So what was your feeling when you were first told you were going to do this film? That must have been amazing, right?
My pants were moving. You know, it was. I remember, you know, Star Wars. I came out. I was doing my lasers with the lights to everybody, and they're going, you know. And then when Empire came out, I'm standing there going, "No, it's not over." My friend's going, "Dude, it's over." It's like, "No, it's not over."
Clearly,
the credits are rolling. It's like, how can it be over? So when the audition came up for the stunt guys. I was only 22 years old.
I had done
a couple of things, and I just had a audition to beat the band. J.R. Randall, who was the stunt coordinator, had asked me to do that. He was really interested because I was a street mime. And he was like, oh, you're
Where
mime.
Were you doing that? In what
I was at Pasadena City College, and I was like the star student. And my teacher had a little group, and he said, well, let's go. We go out and do street mime. And you throw out the hat, and we're doing little things. We had no microphone. We would just kind of yell, this guy, Bill Jones, will be doing
You're a mime and you're yelling?
Well, you got to tell them what you're going to do.
Fair enough. Okay.
You know, it was somebody off the guy who was going to do it is not doing, you know, he's not talking
gotcha.
Now.
Okay.
Yeah, we're doing talking mimes. No. And so we would do around town. We would just do, you know, you make $5 basically.
Yeah.
Like, woohoo. You know, all in quarters. You know, so you got your laundry for the week. And so that was doing that. And he was really interested in that. So he goes and says, can you do like a half monkey, half bear? And I was like, well, yeah, okay. And I started doing that around. And he goes, well, now walk around and doing that. So I started doing that and started becoming more of a character and doing that.
This is the audition you're talking
about? This is the audition.
And so they're not telling you exactly what you would be playing. They just
want
to see what you can do.
Okay, right. Yeah. And it was like it's – they didn't say what it was. They said it was Blue Harvest.
Yeah.
Then, and that's the first time we had heard that. They weren't saying that it was Jedi because he was very, very secretive about that, especially for the people who would try out and then not get it. And then they're going to go off and tell, you know, the National Enquirer, yeah, you know what they're going to do? And, you know, they didn't want that to be out there at all.
I should mention that Blue Harvest was the name that this film shot under, and it had this slogan,
Horror beyond imagination. Why? Because we never imagined it.
And they say that they shot under that. that.
Oh, I had shirts and hats.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
To this day, do you still?
I do, too.
Oh, that's nice to have.
Yeah.
That's good.
I don't know where it is, but it's somewhere in the house.
They shot it so that people wouldn't buy them on set, but also that they could get cheaper rates on locations because they knew people would milk them for money if it was Return of the Jedi or Revenge of the Jedi at that time, right?
I mean, it was Revenge of the Jedi, right, at that time.
So you're at the audition. You're acting
I'm going crazy. The guy's like, he's throwing things at me left and right of like an improv. So it's an improv, and I'm rolling around because I'm 22 and I'm able to do all sorts. I was a high school gymnast. I was a high school wrestler. I played on a team which now, we have a documentary out called The Hollywood Shorties. And it's playing the festivals right now. We're the smallest professional basketball team in the world. I was like the Metal Arc Lemon of the team. I was I was a knucklehead. I would do all sorts of different things. So rolling around on no mat on a plain floor was no problem to me. I've done it doing that on the basketball court. And so he was really impressed with that type of thing. And so there was four of us that were the stunt guys that got to go, and we're going to go to England to just change up the outfits just a little bit to just make them hybrid so we could do stunts and things like that. And they said, what can you do? Because they really wanted a lot of stuff. J.R. Randall was the stunt coordinator for, like, Indiana Jones. Mm-hmm. So he wanted a lot of stuff what we could do. And so I was the fourth guy. The other three guys were all Felix Silla, Jimmy Briscoe, and Bobby Porter. But Jimmy Briscoe and Bobby Porter both got other projects. So now all of a sudden it's Felix and myself. And Felix was an older – he's younger than me at this time. But at that time he had 20 years on me. So I was still – full of energy and all this.
You're the young buck.
I was the young buck. And so
cock of the walk.
Exactly. Well, thank you.
hey, no problem.
And so whenever they throw something, I go, you know, it's like, yeah, I'll be there. Yep, sure, I'll do that. And so I became the number one stunt guy. I was basically in of the battle scenes. I'm not in any of the village stuff.
Because that was shot in the UK, right?
Yeah, it was only 7 days. 7 days. Bing, bang, they're done. We were there like for 7 weeks.
Right.
We're of doing our types of things. We're going running around with explosions. We're up in the trees. We're chasing each other. We're being hit by Furnace Gigantus, which are basically ferns that are gigantic, you know. And they would you'd run into these things, and they're 6 feet tall, and you go boom, and it's like a Three Stooges guy just goes zing, and it brings it back.
Those two that left, was it still that they didn't know that they were shooting a Star Wars film, and
they
thought
they knew it was a Star Wars film?
They did
one
at that
one
point.
Guy got a one guy was going to stunt coordinate his first movie.
Oh, okay.
And so that's a big jump. Yeah. And then he became a stunt coordinator after that. And then the other guy got a was in a the lead of an Italian film, which. Not really. I don't know if he's ever seen it yet.
Oh, well, no.
Yeah, it's too bad.
Him,
it's like, but it was the lead. You know what? I would have probably done the same thing.
Really?
You know, it's the lead in a movie, but you didn't know that it's never going to be seen, you know?
Yeah.
I think he finally got a DVD copy and he saw it like 6 months ago or something like that. So 30 years later, he finally's like, hey, look, I was a pretty good looking guy then.
Okay, so as Chub Ray now. You were telling me this right before we recorded. You also swing with Chewbacca to the Scout Walker, to that Chicken Walker.
Right.
And then they switch out the Ewoks when they go in there, you were saying.
Yeah, there was two guys that myself and another guy were running with Chewbacca. And he says, like, the director goes, all right, you see a Chicken Walker in the distance. And we're running off. And it's like, all right. And then we find out that – Then we swing over onto the top of the Chicken Walker, and then we do the stunt of pulling the guy out and pulling him out, throwing him down, and then they cut to ILM. So the buddy and me are going, we're going to ILM. Yeah, we're getting out of Crescent City, you know, the little podunk town. Nothing against podunk, you know, that town. It was great, but we're going to go to San Francisco for a week to shoot this. Well, we weren't. We
didn't get to go. Who's that? Who's in there? Tebow, that motherfucker?
What? Wow.
Well, he took your part.
Well, he took my part. He went there. I realized they needed a lot more running around. They took three guys – or two gals and a guy down there to do our stunts down there, but because we were too valuable to be up in the at the other location of running around and doing stuff, because we would run, we would basically, there was a lot of running scenes and running scenes of, it was just Ewoks running and running, and then they edited it down from that to, what is it, actually a 10-minute piece that we're actually in. Mm-hmm. But there we're running from stormtroopers, we're running from chicken walkers, we're running from, you know, this and that and there. We're running to get them. We're running, you know, there's a lot. After lunch, a lot of guys were like, you know what, I'm done.
Well, there was a
well,
revolt,
you've got
right?
A, you have a, the, you have a, some of these guys have inseams, you know, 7 inches big. And you put an outfit, the outfit consisted of a fat suit. Well, first we had baby blue pajamas that we put on, and then it was a fat suit. Yeah, I had a lot of testosterone running with those baby blue pajamas. But the fat suit was basically three pieces. It was two, like a pork chop piece that went on each leg and went down to your ankle, and then there was a fat suit that went over it when your arms were all, it was all pieced together, kind of like a football outfit. And then you put the fur coat over that. Then you have latex gloves and latex feet and then a latex mask. So immediately the eyes, the plastic eyes, would fog up. Oh. So you have to look where you're going at this whole thing of where, you know, where, what is my geography of where everything is. And so then if you didn't do that, you would run into each other. You would run into the thing. You could run off a cliff. You know, there's a lot – it could be very dangerous. You could run into a light. There's mortars that are being exploded. Right. So there was a lot of dangerous things going on. And there was only four stunt guys. They brought in two more stunt guys – three more stunt guys and to cover the other two that they had lost. But then a lot of those extras were doing a lot of work that was very so-called, not quite a stunt, but we'll give you $20. And so, and then they were working long hours. And so when they looked at their paychecks, these guys went, hey, where's my overtime? Because they thought they were working overtime. They said, oh, no, you signed a day contract. And it's like, what do you mean a day contract? And it's 8 hours in a day, then it's overtime. It's like, no. It's a 12-hour day. They're like, what's going on here? It's like, that's the contract. And these guys were film savvy. All the little people knew each other. We had worked on another movie called Under the Rainbow.
Right, with Carrie Fisher.
Right.
Yeah.
And so we knew each other, so everybody ganged together and said, you know what, they need us more than we need them. And nobody could hold out on that. Nobody could sit there and say they're going to be the one guy to say, look, I'm better. So everybody got together, and we'd planned this, and we came in much earlier. We snuck into the dressing rooms. So when we came every day on a bus, and so they would come in and see us and wave and all this. And so this time there was nobody on the bus, and they're like, well, where'd they go? And they said, we went to the airport. We're done. We're not getting overtime. You know, see you guys later. And so they're like, oh my gosh. Oh, and it was all Ewoks. All the heroes had gone home, and it was just going to be all the Ewoks for the next 5 weeks. And they're like, what do you mean? It's like, you know, they said they're mad. We weren't being treated that well. I was, because I was a union stunt performer. I was on the other foot. I felt for my guys, but it's like, and then again, I'm getting paid much more than they are because I'm on a union contract, and they all know that. Mm-hmm. They all know they everybody had been union before, but on this they were being non-union extras, so you don't have a lot of pull for that.
Right.
But when you pull together, just like in A Bug's Life, all the ants pull together, or Bug's Life or Ants Farm, whatever those one of those movies.
Well, they unionized on set.
We unionized right then on set, and so when they ran off to go run to the airport, we all jumped out of the dressing rooms and said, Revenge of the Ewoks. We had T-shirts and Revenge of the Ewoks. And they're like, ah, we said, yeah, we got you right here. We got you right here. We know what you're doing. We're not stupid.
Did they change it?
Oh yeah, they changed quite a bit. They gave the guys overtime. They gave them overtime. They started realizing, do you need some rest time? This, But for me, I didn't get a break. I even had to work harder now because now it was – they were getting breaks, but we still had so many pieces of the puzzle to film. And so I was still having to film this all this stuff. So when, if those guys were tired, we didn't have time to be tired. Right. And watching the average size stunt guys who played the stormtroopers and the – it was funny. Sometimes they played the stormtroopers and played the rebels. And they're never being tired. And so I'm in their boat saying, okay – if they keep doing it and they're not getting hurt, those guys were getting blown up and thrown around all over the place. And it's like, okay, get back up. And all right, if you show that you're hurt, you're going home. Uh-huh. You're not making any more stunt adjustments. But if you're, you know, you get up and you're like, I have plenty of time to be hurt when I go back to the motel.
Right.
You know.
How precarious was it? You're in this costume that you described and there are pyrotechnics going off. And did you ever have any close calls or anything?
Oh,
like
I had
that?
Plenty of close calls. What day didn't I have a close call?
That bad.
You know, right? Well, it's not that bad. It's just you're working out in the woods and you're doing stunts. I mean, you're trying to stay safe. A good day is everybody goes home. Alive. That's a good day. We had all good days.
Great days, really.
Yeah, those are great days. In the land of stunts, to go home and everybody is alive, that's a good day. And you have to remember that. People are, oh, yeah, I'm a stunt guy. It's like, you don't realize that until, you know, it's like Walter White saying, you know, I can sell, you know, drugs, and not realizing once you've crossed over into that, it's a different world. And the stunt guy world is... you want to stay safe, and somebody can say, I can do that, but if you can't do that, you can make everybody else not safe. As in, the guys are running, we would run a zigzag as we're running from the so-called chicken walkers. When we run five steps, and there's a mortar standing there, and then we turn a 45-degree angle and run about 10 steps, and there's another mortar there, and so we do another 45-degree angle, and then we run another 10 steps, and a mortar's there. So it's like, boom, you know, it's all choreographed, boom, boom, boom. The last guy usually dies. So the easy one is being the last guy, and the first thing, boom, you're dead.
You know,
all right, boom, I'm laying down until the thing. The toughest one is the first guy, because not only does he have to lead the charge, he's running the whole gambit, and then we're going to take two. It's like, son of a gun. I'm doing it again, you know, so let's do it again.
How did you shoot things like swinging off the speeder bike?
Speeder bike was, it was a new, because I didn't realize what I was going to be doing, but they yanked me up onto a tree, and the camera was pointing, the point of view was, it was pointing down towards the ground, if you remember the shot.
Yeah.
And I come up there, and they I'm on a harness, and they bring me up on a what is called a what's the type of hook? It's a pelican hook that can be a quick release hook.
Oh.
And they pull me up onto this, so I'm set there, and they set the focus right there, and I'm sitting back onto the swing, and so when they release me, it's kind of like a roller coaster, and you're just going straight down. But you have to use your legs to make it look like you're in the opposite way of, like, remember those, like, picture books?
Yeah, the flip books.
Yeah, the flip books. Uh-huh. And then you flip it backwards.
Yeah.
That's what I'm doing. I'm flipping it backwards. I have to make like I'm swinging onto a branch.
Because they're shooting in reverse?
They're shooting in reverse. See, yeah. They're shooting at that. I forgot that. They're shooting in reverse. There's a big...
I got you.
Forgot. Why are you doing this? Because we're going to shoot it in reverse. So I swing backwards like that. The first take I didn't, it was just when they did the pelican hook, it was like, ah!
I'm sure you're like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I've never been that. Okay, let's do that again, Kev. Oh, okay. Now I know what we're doing. All right, this will be fun now. You know, so you get to do it again. And we did it two times and then we're done. We move on. And so that was just so it's like I just grabbed the rope and then I'm swinging back up into that that money shot of just coming right back up. And I had done the I had stolen the whole thing. It's funny. It's first it's Kenny Baker goes running playing Paplu, running off to go steal it. Then it's Tony Cox who rides the whole dang thing from Bad Santa. He rides all that. Yeah, he's the one that went down to ILM. He's the one that told us all about San Francisco. Well, he's the one that we had to take to the back to beat up because he was, you know, and he's strong and he beat us all up. You know, it's like, you got to go to San Francisco. Yeah, get away from me, man. Boom.
So Paplu in that sequence is played by three people.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how much Star Wars has factored into my life. I'm sure you've heard that many times, but I remember this
never? You're the first guy. Movie.
But I remember this movie sitting there in the theater, and I remember that very moment. And it's in a, you know, and it's really interesting to have you here to tell me that side of it and that perspective. And what a strange, like, just personally, what a full circle thing that is for me. It's really a pleasure.
Oh, good. I'm glad you're happy. I'm glad your pants are moving.
Boy, that's a good thing. This table.
The first time you see me, though, I do that long swing into the village.
Yes. At night?
At night. We've got all the heroes on sticks.
Yes. We're going to take a quick break, and then I want to hear all about this.
Oh, okay. We're going to sell some.
That's right. I'm here with Kevin Thompson, single-handedly responsible for bringing down the Empire. Let's keep that alive.
That's me.
You're swinging into the village. Bright Tree Village, as I'm told it's called.
Now it's called, Bright Tree Village. I don't know. I would have named a little bit different place.
Right.
But, Bright Tree Village.
Would you call that? I mean, it seems like it should be named something in Iwakis or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, something a little bit tougher type of neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, like Compton.
So what was it like shooting that swinging scene? This is right when all the rebels are brought to the Ewok village, and we see these wide shots. And a lot of it's a matte painting too, mm-hmm. right? So you shot that in the forest, and then they did some post-production on it?
I was told my name was crackled over a walkie-talkie, and I was at another location, and I come zooming over in the Jeep. They'd pile us in a Jeep, kind of like Vietnam. We all pile in on the door like World War II.
Yeah.
We're just all sitting all over a Jeep and it's going over. Because we filmed actually at a logging property that was going to log it later on.
Some of the stormtroopers and rebels were actually loggers and lumberjacks,
out of work and lumberjacks,
yes.
And so they were – because at that time the housing market was a little down, so – They weren't working, and so they were perfect. They were in shape, and they were, you know, they'd be running around.
That's why they all have beards. All those rebels have beards.
Yeah. A lot of those guys have beards.
Yeah.
They look like lumberjacks.
Yeah, they sure do.
Yeah. They weren't wearing women's clothing. You got that, Tim.
I did. Yeah.
And we were Bright Tree Village was not there when I was swinging into it. And I come in, and all the Ewoks were already set and ready to they had everything there. It was like they were waiting for me, and there was this huge crane, you know, this big, you know, 60-foot crane that they had – I don't know how they got it there, but it's sitting there over a vast valley of dead trees. All these dead trees with – it looked like an orchard of dead trees. So it's all this – all this, you know, gnarly, almost looking like a Dr. Seuss type of thing looking out there. It's, you know, the wasteland. And it was like, so who's doing this? And it's like, you are. It's like, oh, okay.
Here's your pelican.
Oh, this, yeah, this was, I got hooked on a harness on that one because they didn't want me slipping off and being impaled by
a
tree.
I guess that makes a certain amount of sense.
The craziest thing was we had a little – the only thing that made it look like an Ewok village was there was this little bridge, like almost like a half a – not even half a bridge, almost like a step out. And it made it look like Ewok with posts and, you know, chopped and sharp little pieces of wood. So as I swung out, that was cool, just swinging out over the village. And they said, bring your legs up like you're going to bring, you know, you're going to land on the edge or other side of the village. I don't know how the other guys are going to get there because if I'm swinging there,
yeah, really,
you know, it's one of those, oh, I wonder how we got everybody else over
cut
there.
Cut to.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Cut to, let's boiling water, kind of like the Bugs Bunny boiling water.
Yeah.
Yeah. And It was the time coming back because I'm flying back backwards. I'm completely blind, and I have to come back. And I'm remembering on my swing back that there are sharp posts where I took off.
Freshly hacked. Ewok posts.
Oh, they were, you know, the prop guys are very good, on this. And they looked like the Ewoks had carved it. We were fine woodsmen. And I was like, I'm swinging back, but it's like I can't really move because I have to trust the crane operator to swing me back into that little area. And that area is only probably less than this wide, which I'm putting out about 3-4 feet. And so this guy was, I don't remember his name. I wish I do. I don't even know if he's alive anymore. But he was excellent. And he brought me right back into that. And the other stunt guy was spotting me, just boom, brought me back. And it was like, you sat there and it's like, okay, well, let's do that again. It's like, wait, what?
How many times the swing, did you do
it? I think I did it 5 times. Oh, and the swing out was great. It was the swing back of just going, am I going to be impaled?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would never knew. And that's the part of being of let everybody be safe. And if you freak out, I would have probably been impaled because I would have been going, doing that type of thing, going, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh. And it's you have to be in complete trust of somebody else. Of knowing, you know, I'm doing the stunt, but everybody, you have to be trustworthy, but you have to know what you're, you know, knowing what your crash areas, everything that can go wrong, like when you're driving a car.
Right.
Anything that can go wrong will go wrong. Hopefully it won't go wrong, but it can go wrong.
Was that the scariest thing you think you did on that film?
No.
No.
No. But that was pretty scary. A big 20-foot putt to this room.
Yeah.
All right. Could you imagine a piece of wood flying at you from a tree that we blew up, flying at you?
Uh-huh.
You can.
No, I'm with you.
Okay.
I can't. Hold on. You know what? Give me a second. Maybe I can.
Okay.
All right. I've imagined
it. All right. It's 20 foot. How is this ceiling?
This is probably about 15.
15? Okay. 15 feet. Well, give or take 5 feet, I think it's going to kill you if it hits you.
Sure. Yeah.
So that went flying by me and landed about within 5 feet
of me. Like a piece of splintered trunk from an explosion? Like shrapnel style?
Exactly.
But big. Jesus.
Yeah. That's. I kind of said, though, a couple of the words like that. I said a couple of saints myself. Yeah.
You Ewoks really were out there defending the galaxy.
We were. And people go, oh, you guys were just a bunch of pansies. It's like, come here, and I'll give well, kick your, you know.
I have a question about that, because there is this rap that Lucas created the Ewoks as kind of a merchandising ploy to sell toys and stuff.
That's not stupid.
Yeah. Where do you fall on that? Like, what are your thoughts on that whole thing?
I think it's great.
Yeah.
You know, he's a smart guy. If somebody else isn't going to do it, he did it. And, I would have loved to have gotten part of my merchandising, but my character didn't come out till 20 years after the movie.
So you are now an action figure.
I am now an action figure.
Chubb Ray, you come with the catapult playset, right?
Yes, the Kmart vintage Star Wars catapult.
Was it a Kmart exclusive?
It was a Kmart exclusive. And I'd never went into Kmart to the toy section. You know,
and there was no internet
I never
back
even
then.
Knew it.
Yeah, how would you know? And then you found out recently, right?
Right, recently that I was signing autographs at Celebration Anaheim, and a fan comes up and says, hey, "Would you sign this?" And I'm looking at the picture of the catapult, and I'm going, "That's me." I'm the only one that has a slash over the eye.
You're like a reverse member from Kiss. It's like the opposite. You've got the one. Who is the member of Kiss that has the one side?
The star? Paul Stanley.
Paul Stanley. Okay. Yeah. So you're kind of like a reverse Paul Stanley.
Yeah, I'm kind of like Paul Stanley. Yeah.
We'll call you the Paul Stanley of Ewoks.
I think he sings just a little bit better than I do.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's true.
I've heard them unplugged. Yeah. I'm not so sure. But
okay.
So you saw your figure.
And I was like, whoa! But I wore 7 different outfits because they had seen that slash all over the place. And so then they started putting me in different outfits. And sometimes it was from an Ewok who had just been wearing that.
Oh.
Ooh. Ooh, that was tough too.
Yeah,
that's tough in a different area. You know, that's one of those. I'm a stunt guy. Suck it up.
In some ways, the most dangerous part.
Right. You never know. I mean, now we have all these, you know, different viruses that go around, that type of thing. But well, we did have viruses back then. Who knows? Maybe I have one of those. I just don't know it. It's just an Ewok virus. Endorian.
Yeah, you don't know what kind of organisms are on that planet.
We were out in, that area of the woods. You just never knew what was going to get into your outfit, too.
Oh, my God.
Well, you had all sorts of ticks. You had slugs. You had all sorts of types of bugs. Just you name it. Think of yourself out in the woods, and can that get into your outfit? Yes.
As a Star Wars fan, what was it like the day you went out and first saw the Scout Walker, just like the full-size Scout Walker in the woods there? I mean, was that?
It was like a Disneyland. First day at Disneyland, just going, wow.
You're 22, you said?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, when I first went to I saw the village. So we had first walked to the village, our first time at the village. And the village is, 30 feet up above at, Pinewood Studios. Uh-huh. And we're looking at that. And I was like, well, how do we get up there? And there's an elevator. And the other Ewoks had no idea that they were all talking about, I'm going to do the stunt. Oh, yeah, I'm going to do the stunt. Because they had no idea that there was going to be a whole other set of Ewoks in America. They're English, and they're thinking, that's it. They've made these outfits. They're going to be the guys. And then these four Americans will come walking in. They're like, what the hell are you?
So you did go to England to
do some work? I did go to England to customize the outfits.
So, right. That's right. So the four of you are really the only American actors that went of the Ewoks. Okay, interesting.
I went to there. I found out a couple of different ideas. I watched Carrie and Luke say that whole – we're brother sister. And sister. And it's like, whoa. As a fan, you're going, whoa. Then it's like, you start thinking about Star Wars. Yeah. Ew. Now we're getting kind of.
Did you do much work with either Mark Hamill or Carrie Fisher or Harrison Ford?
Not really. I mean, Carrie's scene is with Warwick, that big scene there. And then Luke is in the village.
Yeah, he leaves.
Much, yeah. He's not much for the Endor
studio stuff. Yeah.
And then I did work a little bit with Harrison, and mostly with Harrison's stunt doubles, with the different guys doing his stunt doubling. And because he would come in for I think he had hurt himself on a stunt, so he was – I mean, he's a very active guy. Think of it, of how old he is, and he's still doing these active movies. But they were like, let's save you a little bit. It was the end of the movie, and so he was – the stunt – he'd come in for his close-ups, but there was that scene where he comes running out of the bunker and jumps over. That's you can kind of tell that he's got a sore leg there.
Yeah, he was famously a little burnt out at this point with these movies.
Right, but he's also he's actually hurt.
Oh, wow.
And us as fans, you don't even know it at the time.
No.
Watching him run, I can tell he's hurt. Okay.
Warwick Davis, did you work much with him?
Yes. Because
he was 11 years old, is that right?
I met Warwick in England, and he was a wonderful guy. I can see why he became Wicket. He was just full of energy. Talk about me being excited about what this is a 12-year-old kid going, wow. And then meeting us going, wow, you guys are really stunt guys. Wow. And so we would tell him our resume. He'd go, wow. And he was all excited. And he knew all about the whole history of the Ewoks. He was, he was a walking encyclopedia on Endor, from Endor. Uh-huh. And it was really neat type of kid. And so when Kenny Baker got ill, he was not able to work that scene. Kenny, the production said, let's try Warwick. If he doesn't do very good, Kenny will be better tomorrow, and we'll just shoot it with Kenny tomorrow. And it's just it was a completely different people. I mean, Kenny is a wonderful guy.
Rest in peace. I mean, we're recording this about a week after his passing.
Right.
Yeah.
And he's a wonderful guy. I don't think anybody could ever say an ill word about Kenny. And to the fans, he would stand and he would have oxygen masks, sucking on oxygen with an actual mask wrapped around him. And you know, it's like, can I take 5 minutes here and just get some oxygen so I don't die? And then I'll sign all your autographs, and everybody would be in line, and he'd sign everybody's autographs. Never said, you know, nope, and, you know, I'm not going to do it. But going back to Warwick, he just had so much energy as a 12-year-old boy running up and down on that log and doing that type of thing. I think that's where we got the two movies after that, the Ewok Adventure and the Ewok Battle for Endor.
Which you were in as well.
I was in both of them.
What is your character's name? Chuck-a-talk?
Chuck-a-truck.
Chuck-a-truck. Chuck-a-truck.
I am an oxymoron. I am the badass Ewok. I'm the baddest ass Ewok out there.
Well, that there's got to be one.
There's got to be one.
And it's so fitting that you would destroy the Empire, as we've established.
It might as well be the guy that destroyed the Empire. Yeah. So you come back as Chuck-a-truck.
How was Richard Marquand? Because, you know, there's a lot of talk about how much was he the real director? How much was he a stand-in for Lucas? Was your experience, does it shed any
light on that? I don't have any bad experience. My very first scene with him was going to be we're finding the you know, they see us. They've just dropped out of the net, and there's a bunch of Ewoks. And where I'm over doing the stunts and learning different stunts and doing this, and now I've got other guys trying out. We're trying to get some other stunt guys in there. So now I have heat on my back. Not only am I going to be the stunt guy, but now I've got a big arrow, bullseye on my back, because everybody goes, well, he's number one. We're going to go after and try and be better than him. And so I have to try and keep my chutzpah up, because, you know, if somebody learns something new, we're all learning it new at the same time.
Yeah.
I was just the lucky guy that got the audition. And so now when we're all trying out, you know, they're going, well, let's see if I can do this better than you. And, you know,
I see.
And so you're just trying to do this. And so we all lined up, and he was going to pick. It was kind of like a military lineup, and we're going to, okay, who's going to be in this scene? And I was like, ah, son of a gun. I don't want to be in the scene. It's a bunch of it's extras. I don't want to do this. So it's my first chance to actually be in the movie. I'm like going, ah, I don't want to do this. And he caught that. He realized, because I had picked, and he goes, hey, you, in the back, you right there, you're looking rather bored. And I was like, and I was. I mean, he called me out. I was bored.
Busted.
I was busted. So, you know, he's trying to make a good picture, and I'm ruining it. And I was like, son of a gun, here I'm waiting, you know, my whole freaking lifetime to be in Star Wars. I'm in Star Wars, and the guy sits and calls me out and says that I'm bored. I'm boring. I was like, ah! Then all the other Ewoks going, looking at me going, oh, you blew it. Thanks. Now we got to still stay in these outfits. So now I'm not only, you know, high head because I'm the one guy with the contract. Everybody's looking at me going, thanks for screwing it up for all of us, guy. You know, now he's mad at everybody. Yeah, so he calls me out, but it was for good reason. I couldn't say, I couldn't believe he called me out. No, he called me out for good reason.
It was
deservedly so. And yeah. I never let him do it. He never said that again.
And how was working with Lucas? Because you also rode on the Rose Parade float with him as well,
yes,
right?
I'm the only Ewok from the movie to ride in the on the float.
Oh, wow. How did that come about? Is it your connection with Pasadena City College? I live in Pasadena.
Oh, okay. No, it just was it's funny. A friend who had stayed in contact with Warwick had gotten picked by – they asked Warwick, who would you want to pick? So he had picked a couple of Americans, a guy by the name of Art Gill. And Art called me up and said, since you were in the movie, do you want to ride on the float? I was like, all right. But what is neat about that is that Lucas, about the 501st. 501st is the fan base that is
the stormtrooper,
anything dedicated to the bad guys. And he had put out a thing. He loves it. Then they go off to the schools to never charging anything. They're like, they're nerds themselves. They go out and they are, accountants, salesmen, teachers. And they just are like cosplay guys, and they build these outfits to make them look exactly like what they were in the movies. And it's a worldwide organization. And Lucas likes that, and he said, "You know what? and he put an invitation out to the whole organization, said, if you want to come to Pasadena and march in the Rose Parade, I will put you up. I will fly you out here. I will put you up, and you will march in this massive stormtrooper drill team. And he got a lot of guys to do this, and people flew in from all over the place. And then there was a little 501st convention, and, you know, guys were flying in from South America and Australia and Europe and Asia and, you know, the East Coast and all this. And so it was a grand old time. Trouble was, it's a 3.5 mile track. They're in stormtrooper outfits, Darth Vader outfits, Bubba Fett outfits, and it's 85 degrees on New Year's Day. They're dying. It was the death march. I'm riding on a float. I'm having a good time.
These well, guys, it's a little payback.
Just, Yeah. It was all right.
Fair game.
I knew that they were doing it. I knew it was out there. I didn't take one break. They said, you can take a break. And with a little hut, and they can take a break. The other guys took breaks. I didn't. I was the one that I was like, I'd done this before. I decided I was just going to,
You can take a break on the float?
On the float, walk in, take a little water. I mean, it's those outfits get up to be 140, 150 degrees.
Good Lord.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, those guys are 85 degrees. We're at 140, 150 degrees.
Yeah.
So I drank, you know, a gallon of water once the parade was over. But I felt it's, you know, you're waving and you're out there and you're, it's kind of an ode to the fans.
Yeah.
And I never thought 30 years later, people are still, you know, gaga over Star Wars. You know, it's gaga, you know, usually it's 5 years. Is anybody gaga over any of the movie that came out back then? War Games. Are you gaga over War Games? You know, everybody goes, War Games, what the heck is that? You know, it's any other movie that came out around that time, you know, it's dust. We're the movie that still is playing today. Even E.T., you look at E.T., isn't that cute? No. Jedi is still, you know, will still kick its ass.
Yeah, there's nothing like it, and there probably won't be in our lifetime.
No, it was the most anticipated movie of all time.
It was for me.
I mean, at that time.
It was for me, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I couldn't wait. I have a Revenge of the Jedi poster that I was part of the fan club, and my parents had the foresight to buy it. They bought two.
Wow.
One disappeared, but I have one of them. And
yeah. I was stupid enough. I saw it, and I thought about it, and I went, and I should have bought it, and I didn't.
What was the difference in production feel for that versus like Caravan of Courage, the Ewok movie? Was it different?
It was in the funny sense, when it's a TV show, you have to get it out there and get as much publicity because it's only on once.
Yeah.
And so you didn't want it to be as quiet. You wanted people to know that they were doing another movie. And what was really cool was, since there was only six Ewoks, one, two, three, four, yeah, something like that, I had a Winnebago.
Oh.
I had a Winnebago. I felt like a star. Oh, yeah.
A star wagon.
Oh, yeah. I had a star wagon. During Jedi, you know, a big production, I shared a trailer with 10 other guys.
And were you guys staying at that Ship Ashore hotel?
Ship Ashore, right,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
That was neat because we were all at one place.
What was life like there? Because you presumably all kind of knew each other.
We all knew each other, so you already had kind of groups that were together. You had groups that were, you know, it was a neat kind of a college feel.
Yeah,
and we had, you know, this
dorm feel.
Yeah, it's a dorm feel.
Yeah.
And we had families that were there. We had people who had hooked up. We had people who had broken up.
Uh-oh.
We had we had people who just had known each other for all their lives, and some people who had we knew but we didn't know, you know, and so you got to know them over the course of the time.
Yeah.
Wow. It was a neat experience, and I think they chose that hotel so that we could be not spread out all over the place, but we were all – and we took over the whole place.
It was a big, big hotel, but then they also had like a museum that was a boat on dry land, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I never went to that. It was just – I think it was – I don't know if it was a museum. It was just a boat. It was
my careful research. Yes. That's what it tells me. Yeah.
It was a museum.
Yeah,
that was a museum.
Yeah.
Am I in there?
I, But that's where we are right now.
Oh, okay.
Let's talk a bit about Blade Runner.
Uh-huh. Blade Runner was, I had started as a street extra, and
you played wasn't quite Bear, right?
Bear. The toy. But I started as that, and then Ridley liked my character, and so then he just liked me or something. And then there was another little guy that he liked, John Allen played Kaiser, and he wrote the part, home again, jiggity jig. And that was my very first line that I ever said. And so we just said, home again, jiggity jig. And a lot of times, what is fun, people say, oh, you're in Blade Runner. What part were you in? I go, home again, jiggity jig. And they go, they know exactly.
Yeah.
And what's neat is that your first line, a lot of times it's some stupid little movie, and they go, there he is over there. And that was it. That's your first line. But with mine, I go, home again, jiggity jig. And people go, Bear. Or they go, Kaiser. I go, no, Bear. Yeah. Kaiser was a little guy.
50-50 shot.
Right.
Yeah. What was Ridley Scott like?
To me, it was nice. To the crew, it's, you know, they have different stories. But to me, I have no ill – I mean, the guy wrote me my first bar, yeah. my first line. How can I say anything bad about the guy? But they – a lot of the crew just had a tougher time with him in the way that he had done things. He had a certain way of directing over in the UK. I think he can take over the camera a little bit more as a director. And in the States, you have to look back and let the camera operator mm-hmm. do that. So that became a big issue of different things. But for me, he was gold.
And you're also working on a memoir of your experience as an Ewok?
Right. I'm working on it as a 22-year-old kid of a Star Wars fan and becoming the number one stunt guy in the number one movie of the year. It was quite a journey of what I went through, the different – of what I've talked about here, the pitfalls, and there's so much other things that I had done of different scenes of – that I'll be talk about much more in length of different times that I've almost got killed and other guys being extras and running on logs that are, you know, when a redwood is on its side, it's still 20 feet in the air and it's covered by moss. And we're running with latex feet on this thing. When it comes out, I'll come back on your show and we can plug it some more.
I would love to have it. I would also be remiss if I didn't thank Rob Beals, who is our very own mid-roll staff. It was his wife that made this connection. Rob, say hello.
Hello.
Kevin, thank you so much for talking with me.
All right. I had a great time.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks again, Kevin Thompson. Well done. Thanks again, Rob Beals, for making that happen. Thanks again, you, for listening. Thanks again, me, for glistening. This brings us to the end of my Star Wars Original Trilly string of episodes. Did I just call that a trilly? I didn't even mean to. Are you OG Trilly or prequel Trilly? I'm OG Trilly to the bone. I'm already sorry it's over. These were films that I wanted to tackle from the beginning, and you can rest assured that I hope to get at them again with different actors or different technicians or whatever the case may be. Who doesn't love these movies? And I know that there's a million more things to talk about with them. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd at Matt Gourley, as well as I Was There Too on Twitter. If you have a guest that you can connect me with, please, only email, no Twitter. I don't check Facebook. iwastheretoopod@gmail.com. You guys have been helping me out so much. I appreciate it like you can't believe. Thank you. Next episode, all signs are set for a very special 50th anniversary episode. It hasn't been 50 years, but it has been 50 episodes. And I'm working up something very different and hopefully very fun. And I've got my fingers crossed that it all comes together. We'll find out in 2 weeks. Thank you. And like the two past episodes of this Star Wars trilogy, we're going to go out with a classic sketch from my first podcast, Super Ego. This is the Return of the Jedi Brown B-Wing Squadron sketch. I hope you enjoy. See you soon.
All wings report in. Brown 7 standing by.
Brown 5 standing by.
Brown 8, I'm here.
Well, could you say standing by?
Well, what else would I be doing if I'm here?
I feel like we've got enough enemies in the Empire to fight them.
Brown 8 standing by, Your Majesty.
Okay, well, the Empire basically is a monarchy, so you're gonna feel pretty stupid when you end up getting
This is Brown 9. Can we cut all the bullshit? We just lost our leader, which frankly is fine because he was just under a court-martial.
I heard he stole office supplies.
That was one of the charges.
He looked at me in the shower in a funny way.
Yeah, I know. He also was using an R2 unit for his own personal unit. So, anywho, here come the TIE fighters and the TIE bombers and the pad TIE, which I ordered a half hour ago. You said be here in 15 minutes.
No time for that. Death Star, straight ahead. Guys, it looks like they're under construction. Maybe we should come back later.
You're right.
We should at the very least pardon their dust.
That thing's operational.
Brown 2, standing by. But guys, I've been on every mission. I feel like I'm a team player. Just grow up.
No problem, Brown 2. We're gonna grow up with the help of your fertilizer.
That's Porkins' kid, everybody. That's Porkins' kid.
Porkins? Wait, he's fat and shitty?
You screwed the pooch on the name lottery, by the way, there, Porkins.
It's a rebellion assigned call number. I can't help it. I'm Brown 2.
I'll say.
Let's just blow up a Death Star, guys.
Tow cable detached. I'm gonna trip this Death Star.
I don't think tow cables are the answer this time.
Wait till you see me yo-yo this bitch.
Fair enough.
I feel like I could take on the whole Empire by myself.
Oh, no, please.
Dak, really, just dial it down.
Die?
Dial it, no. Oh, no, no!
Oh, yeah!
Satch mode again.
Oh, God. And it was an out-of-tune death.
I think the shields are still up on that thing.
We've gotta give him more time.
With me, Lobster Man! It's a trap!
Oh, God.
It was only a matter of time.
What am I? A frog beast?
Technically, you're a Mon Calamari.
Am I a Tad Man?
Half tadpole, half man?
Yeah, am I gonna turn into another thing, or is this just it?
Wouldn't that make you like a Tad Boy?
You raise a lot of interesting questions. Oh, I got shot!
That's too bad. I wanted to ask him why he's not a tadpole, if he's ashamed of his Polish heritage.
Heads up, team. It's getting pretty racist in here.
So you're saying tone that down, or like...
Tone it up!
Oh, all right, yeah. Pedal to the metal.
Misa Juju stinks!
Mammy.
You called him Dr. Jones, doll.
Oh, no. That pad tie I ordered a half hour ago has decided to show up and shoot everybody.
I'm not Thai. I'm all-purpose Asian.
Jesus Christ, could these shields be any more up?
You guys, I brought my chick along. Is that cool?
Hey, guys.
Oh,
I'm just a girl.
Look, we're kind of in the middle of something right now, making an assault on Death Star number 2. Baby, show them how you shoot.
Oh, yeah. Poo-poo.
That would have been great if the shields were down.
Dude, you're obsessed with these shields.
Well, how long can it fucking take?
Dude, there's a lady on the comm. Maybe you should watch your language.
I apologize.
Okay, bye. I'm gonna eat a salad.
Rebels of the Brown Squadron, this is Death Star Command. Our shields have been down for 15 minutes.
God damn it, I knew it.
Please end this.
Don't underestimate its power, guys.
Oh, is that Porkins again?
I'm Brown 2, all right?
Well, you know, your dad died. That doesn't make you psychic or anything like that.
No, I'm still grieving, so don't be an asshole.
Are you grieving or covered in gravy?
Oh,
good one.
Foil high five. Get right next to me and we'll hit the foils.
Okay, here we go.
I'm making my attack run.
Yeah, this way we'll get our revenge. I'm sorry, our return.
God damn it, I have a pretty good feeling about this.
Guys, I've just done a space maneuver.
There's one on your tail, Brown 2.
Gross!
I can't shake him! I can't shake him!
Do I have to do it here? There!
Thank you! For once, I feel like I'm part of the team!
I'm making my attack run again.
I am too!
Not without me!
Oh, Elephant Man! How did you get in here, John Merrick?
I just like to sleep like a regular man.
Well, that's not going to do us much good.
Will this lady undress for me?
What, Lady Mon Mothma? Many bathrooms died for me to take off this gown.
So beautiful. The way your breasts scrape against your belly button.
Can we get some more unintelligible characters up in here?
This is Quasimodo. I'm right behind you.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Boy. It's me, Alfred Hitchcock. How dare you have a meeting
without wing.
Anyone else?
I'm the camel man. So named because my lip is split down the middle and in many ways are an articulated finger so as to eat bushes on the outback.
Ew, he spit on me.
That's kind of my thing.
He's making his attack run.
Spit Pino's away. It's a direct hit.
This is it.
She's gonna blow. Let's get out of here. I'm camel man. I smoke 7 packs a day.
Jesus.
I have the drinking problem, and I beat my dad.
It went in. Let's take it home, boys.
Yeah, we gotta get back down to Endor so we can launch fireworks. Fireworks, George Lucas. That's how it ends. Like it's 9 p.m. at Disneyland. Fireworks.
I love fireworks.
Goodbye, everybody. I'm flying into the side of this thing.
Holy smoke, crash landing.
Oh, yeah.
Remember, the Force will be with you sometimes.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Adam Sachs, and Chris Bannon. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.